I didn't even realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a back seat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
The Killer Bees!
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Don't sweat the technique.
Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Ooh, what up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank, I'm Branham. It's the assistant to the regional manager, Joe George, behind the glass, and it is a Friday edition, a going-home edition of the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. And at last, it is here. The NFL schedule has been released, the moment we've all been waiting for. It's finally here. We know not who the Houston Texans are going to play. We already knew that. We just know the order. We know the primetime games. We know that the Texans were a little disrespected. But it's finally here, Blankers. How did you consume all of the schedule yesterday whenever it came out?
I ignored it because I knew that I was going to get inundated with it all day today, nationally, locally, and otherwise. Everybody had their scalpel out and their microscope, and they were digging deep, and they were dissecting and getting into all of it, and I was like, okay, well, I'll just let everybody have their fun, and then we'll start looking at it and figure it out. And you know, the more important thing to me was I was checking, and ESPN was the latest to come out with the win totals, because I'm just curious, for as much as you and I have tried to be as honest as we possibly can about wins and losses, no matter what they did with the trade, and obviously how critical we've been of what they gave up, it's how's it going to translate to what everybody else sees with this team? How improved do they think they are? How many wins are do they see them over a year ago? And it's pretty consistent right now that, I mean, I know that the Texans fans believe, but I think that most prognosticators and experts across the country are hovering right there in that 5-6 range.
Yeah. I put more stock in Vegas than I do ESPN, yeah. But I saw the ESPN figures. I saw the NFL Network figures. Cynthia Freeland, yep. A friend of the show, she had like her analytics, which I'm sure we'll get to at some point. You know, we will talk about that. I have 7 observations of the schedule release. I feel a little bit like Cody Stoots, and Cody Stoots would be happy with me that it's 7, which we know that Stoots is a big fan of football numbers. Mm-hmm. That's why I made sure to get 7 schedule observations, not 6. Not 8, but 7, a good round football number. But before that, you know what the best thing that I enjoyed about the schedule drop was? Actually all the content creators for the team's website and like social media stuff posting their videos of the schedule release. Like you had Peyton Manning, who did like The Office with the Denver Broncos release. You had like Man on the Street with the Tennessee Titans, where they were going around and showing the logos of every team that they played, and then just everybody was guessing wrong. I actually like the Bears too, and I'm not just saying that because Joe George is a Bears fan, but they did the whole like parody of Chef, which was hilarious, and they had Seth Rollins on there, who's like a big Bears fan. I like that more than I think I actually cared for the schedule release. I thought that the videos were quite frankly pretty cool.
I just, to me, it's amazing how big of a deal this has become, and I think it's so overblown, because it's like with trade rumors, or you know, right before the trade deadline, or free agency rumors. It's like everybody's fighting to be the one that got the leak, that found out who was playing that third weekend in October and who got this game. And I'm just going, man, at a certain point, it's coming out. Everybody's going to know, and it's not going to alter anything if you knew ahead of time when the Texans were going to play, you know, the division games or when they were going to play Carolina. But my goodness, it's gotten to be a big deal. I was thinking about it when I saw the Tennessee video, and I'm going, man, I wonder how far out in advance the teams in their creative department and in their social media department started thinking about what's our theme going to be for schedule release and how are we going to be creative, and then how many months it took to get into it before they even released it. Because it's a process, yeah.
Yeah, probably a long time ago, especially since you know your opponents. Like, you know, the ordering of it. And some teams didn't even order it. Like, the Bears with their little, like, the chef menu and all that stuff, it wasn't even in order. They kind of just threw in the graphic late. I'm sure they also get the leaks way before. The NFL, I'm sure, tells them probably the day before. Mm-hmm. So they can do the final editing and things like that. But I thought it was really cool. The Texans one, you know, they had Paul Wall. They had some Houston themes, a little Chopped and Screwed, stuff like that. I thought it was pretty good. My favorite, though, I think, was either the Titans or the Bears. Like, the Titans was just funny. I think the Bears was kind of the most creative. I thought that was pretty cool. Joe, I'm curious what you thought of that. Did you like the Bears video?
Yeah, I mean, we talked about the Bear, the TV show, coming back in June, like, oh, when I tweeted about the other day. And, like, so I love the TV show itself. So I think, like, if they had done, like, The Office, The Bear, like, Breaking Bad, like, those are some, like, my favorite shows right now. And it's like, I loved it. I thought it was great. It was super creative and funny. Like the Titans, those just,
oh my god,
those dummies in Nashville were incredible.
It just seems
can we steal that idea next year? Can we do that next year?
Yeah,
yeah. Let's do that next year. Let's put that on the calendar and do that next year.
We're gonna show a picture of the wheelhouse and then just have people say,
"That's a good idea too." That's a good. I was thinking just for like a schedule release and doing that like around the city, but it's a good idea. Like, we could do other shows on our lineup. That would be hilarious.
Yeah,
too.
Just show the pictures without the title of the show and say, "Do you know these three men?" And then when people say,
"What's your best guess?"
Like, what does this person do for a living?
Chef of the day.
Yeah,
they see Cody, BK, and Jake, and they go, "Oh, it's that show where the competition chef of the day and who wins the cooking deal."
Yeah, but I think we can do that, and then just like, yeah, like, what does this person do for a living? Just show a picture of Paul and be like, "What does this person do?"
We can do that, like, here pretty
soon. He's an aspiring actor that waits tables. And
that's a great idea.
It looks exactly like it.
No one stole our idea because we thought of it first.
That's right.
Are you ready for my hard-hitting, cutting-edge 7 schedule observations?
Bring it.
With the NFL schedule release for the Houston Texans, the Branham 7 schedule observations.
Can we do it for you? Can we do it real quick?
Yeah, you do it. Yeah, you go for it.
The moment you've been waiting for. Jeremy Branham's 7 big things from the schedule release of the NFL now.
Look at that. That's what the Killer Bees do. We just produce stuff. We produce content like these content creators do. Good work, Blankers.
Thank you.
All right, first one. The first one. This is terrible if you're a Red Zone fan and a Houston Texan fan. The schedule coming out, because the Houston Texans play every game but 2, one of them at 3 o'clock, one of them to be determined, at noon on Sunday. So if, like, you're a huge Texan fan, but you also love watching Red Zone, the fact that the Houston Texans are at minimum playing 15 of their 17 games on a noon Sunday kick, terrible if you're a big fan of the Red Zone channel too. You're going to need a 2 TV setup, and you're going to have to figure out what you're doing with the audio, because the Texans are playing 15 times at noon at minimum.
Yeah, I saw the one that was almost catering to the Broncos, right? It's a road game for the Broncos, and they still get the 3:05 start time to
where that makes sense.
Yeah, to where that they can kind of recover. Sometimes I don't know if that should be making sense. Sometimes on the road, you got to deal with that.
Oh, you're talking about a home game against Denver. That's right.
Yeah, it's a home game for the Texans against Denver, and Denver still they don't have to suffer through having to play early because they get that 2-hour pad and play the late game.
Yeah, first schedule observation, not good for Red Zone. That's a good point with the Denver thing, okay. Kind of helping out the Broncos. The second one is, look, the first 2 games of the schedule, like, you're going to play Baltimore at some point. Like, Baltimore is going to be a tough opponent no matter when you get them. You know, rookie quarterback going up against a good defense. Lamar Jackson won't be hurt for week 1, so maybe a little unlucky. But, I mean, Baltimore is going to be a tough, you know, opponent no matter where they were. But the Colts, you play them the very next week. I think that it's kind of a favor that you get Lamar Jackson week 1, kind of see what he's up to. You know, he's a really good thrower of the football, but also a really good runner of the football. And then the next week you get Anthony Richardson, who's the same similar type of QB. I think that's actually favorable for the Houston Texans, not necessarily in week 1, but in week 2, playing same style of quarterbacks back-to-back weeks.
Yeah, no, it's an interesting point. I like where you're coming from that angle. I also like it from a Texans perspective, from the simple standpoint. Upsets happen in week 1. Week one is the most unpredictable week for a lot of reasons normally in the NFL. And if you go back and look over the recent history, a lot of teams, you know, a lot of times, and look, I lived it with Green Bay when Rodgers wouldn't do any camp and wouldn't play in preseason. Week one, no matter how good the matchup looked for Green Bay, they were going to crap the bed or struggle, and the spread was going to be very much in favor of whoever they were playing. And not a lot of teams, but nationally, for whatever reason, picked up on that. And you could capitalize, and there's upsets a lot in week one, and then the rest of the season plays out, and you're like, how'd that happen back then? And a lot of it's because of who rests and how many veterans don't really exert a lot of energy until the season starts for real, and then it's a week or two before they settle in. I like the fact that the Texans are going to play a team that has the potential to be a good team like the Ravens, and they could catch them in week one and maybe, you know, stay in the ball game or have a chance to be competitive in that football game.
Yeah, week ones are weird. If I could have, like cherry-picked when I would have played Baltimore from a Houston Texan perspective, I probably would have picked them in the, after the bye than before the bye in week one, just because I think it's a really tough opponent, and, you know, Lamar Jackson has a better chance of being healthy week one than he does, like, week 11. Observation number three, seven Branham observations. Observation number three, you have a much better chance to see Will Levis if you're into that sort of thing. If you're into the rookie versus rookie matchup, if you're into the Texans just destroying Will Levis and you can rub it in my face. Well, the Texans get the Titans week 15 and then week 17, 2 weeks later. Much better chance Will Levis plays later in the year than earlier in the year. So if you're for that rookie-rookie matchup, you're for the Texans dominating Will Levis, and you can tell Branham how big of an idiot he is, much better chance with the schedule release that you will see the Houston Texans against starting quarterback Will Levis.
Well, I know that fires you up immensely. And I
literally do not care.
And I think that it's really from the standpoint of just what we just went through for several months in terms of trying to analyze and figure out the talent level and where these guys were going to be drafted at the quarterback position. You want to see everybody. You want to see right from the jump in the first year of their careers, you want to start analyzing, because everybody's going to do it anyway, but you want to start analyzing, you know, if you swung and missed or if you got it right or if the knocks on them were accurate and go from there. And I think that it's interesting because you look at a year earlier when you had the Kenny Pickett and Malik Willis draft, and really only one guy ended up going in the first round, but none of them looked like that they were really worthy of being high picks. This is the opposite. Now you've got Richardson in that mix as well. You've got four guys that were constantly being discussed every single day about how high would they go and top 10 picks and all these things. Three of them did, one of them didn't, and now you're interested to see, hey, how are all four of them performing? I expect by that time of the season, like you, that you will see Will Levis, and you can get a pretty clear understanding of, hey, who was right, who was wrong, and were they right in the way that they broke them down?
All right, can I talk you I'll tell you my final four of my seven Branham schedule observations on the other side. Also, what are your schedule observations? 713-780-ESPN-HRP listener line. You can have fun with this. I mean, it's just a schedule. 713-780-3776. Most of us are on Twitch today, twitch.tv/ESPN975. He's at Pac-Man Joel on Twitter. I'm at Jeremy Branham. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN975 and ESPN925.
Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Got a texter at 713-780-ESPN. That's our text line, not his number. 8924, why are there so many games on Fox this year? CBS and Fox, they no longer have exclusive rights to the conference. It's wide open. It's free agency. The Texans do have six games on Fox this year. For the most part, they kept it pretty traditional, though. Like, CBS still has a good chunk of the AFC games. NFC, still a good chunk of those games are going to be on Fox, which, does it really matter a lot? I don't know. Like, we get conditioned into thinking AFC games CBS, NFC games Fox. I totally understand the conditioning. I, for one, am not a fan of production by Fox. I think CBS does
really
a much better job with their production. Yeah, I can't stand Fox games.
Why is that? I think Fox kind of, I think they have a bigger budget. I think they boost it in terms of the amount of cameras and the angles and the things. I think they've changed the game a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, different strokes for different folks. You're on the Fox side, I'm on the CBS side. I don't know. I enjoy watching CBS games more than I like watching
Fox
games.
Friends, a Cougar.
That's not really
lead,
it.
The lead man.
Go Cougs. I mean, for me, it's about the production. Like, I have no problem with the Fox broadcasters.
Now, let me ask you
most
this.
Most of them are good.
Do you think that might be because living here your whole life, you've been accustomed to the AFC and being on CBS, whereas I grew up
Packer guy, yeah.
Yeah, growing up in the NFC with the Packer games on Fox, that might have something to do with it.
Yeah, you might be right. You might be onto something there. Like, we just kind of get conditioned into thinking a certain way, because most Houston games on CBS, most Green Bay games on Fox.
I was going to ask you, do you like both you guys, do you like the fact that it used to be where, I mean, even when you were trying to figure out when the game was on or whatever, you knew basically what network it was going to be on, because if it was a conference game, then it was going to be on CBS. I personally like that I knew that the NFC matchups were going to be on Fox, the AFC matchups were going to be on CBS. I don't know, you know, the further thinking and the scheduling, I'm sure, played into it with why they just kind of made it a free-for-all, but I kind of like the fact that there was that structure.
Yeah, I like the structure, too. I'm on your side of that. In terms of, like, finding the game on TV, like, I know how to work a remote control, so I'm good on that.
I know how to work the NFL Sunday ticket until it went over to YouTube.
Yeah, that's a weird deal. I hope that Red Zone's still on, like, a free agent. Because you know how last year...
It got dropped.
The Red Zone channel?
Yeah, I think I heard John and Lance talking about it the other day.
They didn't drop the Red Zone channel.
I think that YouTube isn't picking it up, and or the Siciliano version for sure, I think, got dropped.
One of the guys got cut.
Yeah, Siciliano did. I think that was the DirecTV version. But, like, the other one with the Hanson guy, like, that was on Hulu. That was on all of the other cable providers. That was, you could buy it strictly online. They're not getting rid of the Red Zone channel, I don't believe. But I hope that they still kind of farm that out, as opposed to having it exclusive to YouTube, because that would stink. Because I'm a big fan of the Red Zone channel. I'm going to purchase the Red Zone channel if I can, but I'm not subscribing to YouTube for it. 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line for Chris. Chris, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. What's up, Chris?
Hey, gentlemen. Thanks for taking my call. A couple of things. Since we saw the schedule projected that the Texans have the third easiest schedule, do your over-under win totals change from the previous weeks that you had? And one more thing. I heard on the warehouse they were discussing how tight-lipped the Texans have been with who they were going to pick in the draft. And since it's pretty much known that we were in a bidding war for the third pick with Tennessee when they felt that we were going to pass on a QB, do you think that hurt us in the long run, because we ended up giving up more, as opposed to if we would have been straight for it, we probably would have gave us less? Since we were technically not in a bidding war.
Yeah. Appreciate the call, Chris. I'll go backwards with that. Maybe we can reverse engineer it. As far as the trade, look, the Texans, I'm kind of over talking about the trade because, like, we're wait and see mode now. Yeah. The schedule's out. We're looking ahead to the 2023 season. If you're not aware of our opinions on the trade, Chris, we were not fans of the trade. We feel like Nick Caseri got fleeced. Hopefully, Will Anderson and C.J. Stroud change our opinions of that trade in a year, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, whatever the case may be. In terms of, like, being held, like, the bidding war thing, I still think the Texans gave up the quarterback price. Like, you look at the trade that the 49ers had for Trey Lance. Those two trades are very, very similar. So even though the Texans took CJ first, there was still the huge package and the huge ransom that you had to give for number three. So I don't think that the Texans, like, eliminated – they might have eliminated contenders from trading up, but they didn't eliminate or lessen the price by much.
Yeah, no, I agree with you, and we talked about it. It was I don't want to say it was all semantics, because I think that everybody knew that, you know, once that there was the rumors and where the late push was coming, where they were in discussions, that from a Texans perspective, it was smart business. It was smart business to try and take the quarterback first and then make the deal for a defensive player, because they were interchangeable parts, and you knew that anything for a quarterback was going to up the price, and presumably you'd have to give up much more. You still gave up a boat ton of assets that you and I are both on the same page was too much, but you got who you wanted. And then it also goes back to, of course, who made what, and Cal came out to try and clear it up and just kind of, I think, mucked it up even more. Lord knows how it actually went down, but they did what they did. And now we just have to see how it plays out. And it's not going to play out in 24 hours or half a season or even a season. It's going to play out over the next 2 to 3 years, but the real big crux of it that everybody's watching next is going to be, where do you finish as opposed to where does the Browns finish? And then what's that pick value going to be come next year at draft time? other than that, you just got to kind of put it in your back pocket for now and move forward.
Yeah, as far as the schedule, it didn't really change my opinion at all. I'll put my homer hat on a little bit later, though, and try to talk you into a homer opinion, perhaps. We already knew it was the third easiest schedule. It's just a matter of, like, what it looked like in terms of the order. When were the 17 episodes? Jacksonville did a pretty good schedule release video, too. So it didn't really change my opinion based on seeing the schedule and seeing the Houstons, who the Texans are playing each week. In fact, I went through and gave, like, my real prediction, and we'll say those a little bit later. But I had the same amount of wins than I did before I knew the order. So it didn't affect my opinion and the whole third easiest schedule thing. We already knew it was the third easiest schedule.
Yeah, I'm with you. I've said overall and all along, no matter what you did in the draft and in free agency and the moves that you made, you had the worst roster in the NFL coming into this offseason. And I don't think that the move, and I like the draft, and I liked filling the holes that they did by getting the players that they got in the draft. And I even liked what they did in free agency and doing things a little differently and getting some more meaningful players on this roster. But I don't think it got them out of the worst five rosters in the league. And I think that five is a significant number, because I think that's why, as you go back to what you said last segment about, I trust Vegas like you do. And when they set a line and when they look at what they think, they normally know people and they know some things. And it falls in line with what we had been talking about. And I think 5.5 is the right over-under line. And I had them right at 5 for the year. And I'm not going to change that based on peer pressure and or just what I've seen. Now, we're going to watch this roster develop. And I know that the schedule will be in a lot of people's eyes to say that's in our favor, to where we should win 6 or 7 or maybe in some people's minds more games than that. I'm not that guy. My realistic, honest approach, non-homer approach to this season is, I hope I'm wrong, but I don't see a whole lot of wins more than what you had a year ago, no matter how much you did to improve the roster for the long term. Because short term, a rookie quarterback's going to take his lumps. A new coach, new coordinators, everybody getting their feet wet and kind of getting comfortable and then trying to play it out, no matter how difficult or tough the schedule is or easy the schedule is, I feel like 5 is an accurate number.
Who's trying to peer pressure you?
Oh, I think fans tried peer pressure. I think my buddies have come out and said, because there's a lot of blue Kool-Aid drinkers.
Didn't know you had any of those.
Yeah, I get a lot of guys, a lot of my buddies too, that are like, come on, man, you can't see. Look, I can see improvement, and I can see they got some better football players, but I can't see how that translates from the fact that you have a rookie quarterback and you still have holes on this team, and everybody is just trying to get acclimated, to where that's going to make me think this is going to be a fringe playoff team, or this is going to be a 7 or 8 win football team. Again, hope I'm wrong. I just don't see it right now.
Even 6 wins would be 100% improvement.
Yep.
Like, people don't realize how big of an improvement that is. Or maybe they do, but the small minority don't. 3826, dislike all Fox announcers. I'll take CBS every game. 9123, Aggie Matt says, I can't stand the football robot. I'm right there with you. The football robot's weird. I don't like the football robot at all.
It's seen its life cycle, hasn't it? Like, initially, they were doing all the bells and whistles and all the extras that when they first were trying to, like, make a name for themselves, because people were like, is Fox good enough? Are they a big enough network to do something like this? That's where it started. I think it can finish now. I don't think anybody is into the Transformer look and all the stuff that they keep bringing back out there, and they could change that. I'm with you on that. But I also think that losing Aikman and Buck, I think Fox lost a lot more than they're willing to admit when they lost that A-team.
713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Back to what everybody wants, the remaining Branham schedule observation. 713-780-ESPN, if you want
to
play along.
Branham with four more on the show.
Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Razor-sharp commentaries delivered with a purpose. You found the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Few of the texters, 9780, do you think Stroud plays week one? I personally do, Blankers. What do you think?
Yeah, I do too. I think that, barring injury, I think this is why you went out and got him. And I think that, you've got your boy as a great big brother. I think there's a better chance that he starts than Davis Mills is on this roster. I just think that he is the guy, and with the offensive line and the way they've shored it up and the way they're committing a lot of dollars to it, I think that you know, there's no better time than the present to let him take his lumps if he's going to take them, but get his feet wet, get going, and start the C.J. Stroud era.
8092 says Jim Nance retired, so go ahead and hop on over to the Fox side. I'm going to be a, well, actually, guy for a second. Nance only retired from college basketball.
Right.
He's still doing NFL. He's still doing golf. He didn't retire permanently. He just retired from college hoops. So he's still going to be the A-tier on the CBS broadcast. 713-780-ESPN. All right, here's my fourth of seven schedule observations. I hate, Blankers, how they staggered the divisional opponents. Like we mentioned the Texans or the Titans a second ago. Mm-hmm. They play the Titans week 15, week 17. So they play the Titans 2 of 3 weeks. That's weird to me.
Yep.
But week 15, week 17 are the two times you play the Titans. You play the Colts week 2, week 18, so they almost book in the year, and you play Jacksonville week 3 versus week 12. I personally prefer play a division rival earlier in the year and then late in the year, like the Colts and like the Jaguars. I don't really love it with Tennessee. I don't like the way that they stagger the division opponent. I haven't looked at everybody's schedule this closely. I looked at the division. I looked at the Houston Texans. But you see this every year where you play the same opponent like twice in 3 weeks. And personally, I can't stand it. I don't like it at all.
Yeah, I don't like at all the closeness when they play either back to back. It's like a back to back in basketball that I can't stand when they play a home and home, and you play the same team within, you know, two straight days, just because you play in a different gym. You know, you might be going through injuries, and especially when you're talking about from a divisional perspective, I like where you're coming from, where early in the season someone might have an injury, or you might not be clicking yet. And then get them again late in the season, so there's a better barometer, a better gauge, and it might mean something towards the division. But, you know, it could cost a team basically a whole lot in their season if you play them twice in 3 weeks and you just have injuries, or it's not going your way, or you're just not clicking. And I don't like that at all. I'd like to stagger it out and spread it out a little bit more as well.
All right, schedule observation number 5. This is from a very Houston Texan, try to get win perspective. I would have rather have gotten Arizona pre-bye than post-bye. Like, if you're looking at what's the best chance for you to beat the Arizona Cardinals, it's probably without Kyler Murray.
Yeah.
And there's no doubt Kyler, I mean, there's no, like, you know, it's no guarantee that Kyler Murray's back at all this season. They assume that they're going to get him back, but they don't know when. But getting Arizona week 11 as opposed to like week 2, I think makes that game a more losable game.
Oh, absolutely, for sure. Without question. I mean, if Kyler comes back, he's not going to be in a tankathon, and he's got a lot to prove. And I completely agree in the fact that if you want to catch a lot of these teams, and I said, the same reason why I said you catch Baltimore in week 1, I think that gives you your best chance to actually be in that ball game and catch a win. I think the same is exactly right with Arizona. I think that when you look at some of these other teams on the schedule, you're thinking about the fact that I think early on you'd probably rather catch Denver as well, because of the fact that, you know, Sean Payton is trying to implement things, and Russell Wilson with a new head coach, new coordinator. I think by midseason, if they do get it, if they are clicking, they'll probably have a lot more continuity midseason. You'd rather see them at that point as well. But I think there's no better example of that than Arizona, because Kyler Murray not playing for the first 6 or 7 weeks, and I think that might be a little bit generous. But if he doesn't play up until the break, then you got to really advantage whoever they're playing. I think when he starts playing again, and because, like I said, he's got some things to prove too, I think it's a different story.
Like Arizona, you get him, I don't know when Kyler's coming back, but let's just call it week 8. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you get Arizona in the first 7 weeks, you're getting either Colt McCoy or rookie Clayton Toon. You get Arizona in the second half of the year, and especially if it's week 11 and he's coming back week 8, that means he's had a few games to kind of get his legs underneath him. Kyler Murray gives the Cardinals a much better chance to beat the Texans than Colt McCoy or Clayton Toon.
Assuming that they keep D-Hop, you got a guy that you know he knows how to find, and even if he just throws it up in the air, he knows where he's going to be, where he likes the football. Whereas opposed to the other guys, you'll take your chances. But I think it means a lot to have a guy like Kyler Murray quarterbacking that team versus the other two guys you mentioned.
Yep. And then one of my, where am I? Number 6? Yeah, number 6. We might see a homecoming for a couple of quarterbacks in Houston. We just mentioned one of them, Clayton Toon, go Cougs. If Kyler Murray's not back at all this year, really good chance that Clayton Toon could start that week 11 game in Houston. And also another potential homecoming if Kyle Trask is the starting quarterback at Tampa Bay. There's still like going to be a camp battle there. He might be the opening day starter, as a matter of fact, over Baker Mayfield. But if Baker Mayfield does win the job, by week 9, we could see it turned over to Kyle Trask, depending how Baker's playing, depending where Tampa Bay's at in terms of their record in the standings. We might see Manville's own Kyle Trask at NRG Stadium in week 9.
Look, I mean, all I had to do is reference the Vince Young game to tell you which way that would go. If you're a Texans fan, I'm not sure that's a good thing, because I still remember that overtime and Vince Young and all the people that stood and gave him a standing ovation and the way that thing ended. But, I mean, look, overall, I think it'd be a nice story. I think the bigger story, too, from the Texans' perspective is there's just so much excitement right now in terms of the interest level with the picks and D'Amico and the new and improved Cal and Hannah show. I think that everybody – I don't think you're going to see less than half full for the whole season. I think things can change by midseason, kind of like you were talking about with the Cardinals game, if they completely crap the bed. And maybe some people will start jumping back off. But for right now, I think that you probably have as much excitement about this team as you've seen maybe in the last 4 or 5 years, if not longer. I think that maybe since the Bill O'Brien era. So I think that people are going to be juiced up and go to games, and they're going to forgive and forget and try and move forward with this team. And they're excited.
My last one, a 7 schedule observations. The Texans have a really good chance to give the entire city about as good a Christmas present as a football team can give to its city, especially a team that, you know, probably isn't going to make the playoffs, but we're all wanting, you know, improvement and some positive signs, which I think we're going to get. But they can give this city the Christmas present that we all want from a football point of view. They get the Cleveland Browns and Deshaun Watson at home on Christmas Eve. The Texans can deliver. Toro Claus can give the city a victory over Deshaun Watson. You beat your former QB, the pervert Deshaun Watson. You win the game over Cleveland, and you don't have your pick. You have Cleveland's pick, so it dampens Cleveland's where they're picking in the first round of the draft. Toro, the Texans can deliver Houston the best Christmas present of all.
Yeah, look, I think from the perspective, and it's 2 wins in 1, right? Because you get a win, you're basically comparing because of the Browns pick that you have versus the one you gave up. You know, you can get revenge on Deshaun Watson. You can get, you know, a game up in terms of having a better record than the Browns. You're right. It's just a massive win-win for the city if they can find a way to win that football game. And I was looking again at when I was looking at the ESPN version of Vegas trying to predict wins, and they got the Browns right around 9. Well, it'd be nice if, you know, one of those 9 didn't come against the Texans in Houston, because there's still a ton of people that don't forget that want to see him pay a price and would love to have it happen right on their field.
Toro Claus, one time, baby. What's the one game you're looking forward to most? Because that one's mine. Houston, Cleveland, December 24th, the pervert comes back to NRG Stadium again. But it's the day before Christmas. It's on Christmas Eve. It's probably for a team that didn't get any primetime games. 4 teams didn't get primetime games. Arizona, I believe Tampa.
Atlanta?
Oh, yeah, not Tampa, Atlanta. It was Arizona, Atlanta, Houston, and Indy. There's only 2 teams that have non-standalone games, which are just like, you know, the standalone games, nothing else in the time slot, and that's the Houston Texans and, I believe, Arizona. So the Texans got about as little respect from the schedule makers as possible. They and Arizona, the two teams that got the fewest amount of respect. I think the closest thing to, like, a big-time game for the Houston Texans is that Christmas Eve game against Cleveland. What's the game that you're most looking forward
to? I think it's a Carolina game, because there's been just so many comparisons for so many months now about Bryce Young and for CJ Stroud. And then, of course, you can either look at it from that perspective. You can look at it from the one that got away because of the Indy game at the end of the season, and you really had no chance ever to draft Bryce Young after all the talk about Bryce Young. And I think just that first glance to compare the two and see the situations they're in and see the abilities that they have to try and see how you feel after seeing them play head to head. I'm interested in seeing that.
Yeah, that's a good call. I'm really that would be 2nd on my list probably. What's interesting about that is they're both coming off their byes too. Like, the Texans are coming off of their bye. The Panthers are coming off their bye. I wonder if the the NFL, like the schedule makers, if they put both those teams playing after a bye just to guarantee the rookie quarterbacks play. Because like, I know that we both think that Stroud and Bryce Young are going to be starting week one for their two teams, but sometimes rookie quarterbacks don't play. A natural time to get rookie quarterbacks into the starting lineup is after the bye. So I wonder if the NFL schedule makers kind of had that in the back of their mind. Like, okay, we think they're going to start. There's no guarantee that they will, but we feel really good that both will start after a bye in week seven.
I think that's fair. And look, don't ever underestimate how much thought goes into and how much the networks play into as well the choices for these games and the schedule and everything else. Because you brought up a point that I guess I can actually lend something to, and that is if the NFL does anything like the NBA does, we see different – when I was working in the NBA, we saw different versions of the schedule a month out and then 2 weeks out and then a week out. And then 24 to 48 hours before the schedule release, we got it. And it was the final version. And if you let it out in 1 year, some Red Rowdy or some Clutch fan got it. And Tad Brown almost had his 943rd coronary because, you know, the fact that it got out too soon. But you have to, for working purposes, put a lot of thought into this. And that means networks and also the league itself. And I think you're right. I think that they thought about this and just thought, hey, this is a matchup that two teams that probably aren't going to be relevant, but they would be relevant if both those guys played. When's our best chance to try and get that game and get all those goals accomplished regardless of the outcome of the game or where the teams sit in the standings? That's probably about the right time.
Yep. 713-780-ESPN, what's the one game that you most look forward to for the Houston Texans? I want Toro Claus to deliver that victory against the Cleveland Browns. 713-780-3776. Big news in the city. Mark Berman retiring. We'll talk about that a little bit later. But also the news of the morning. Jose Altuve is going to be a spacer. He starts a rehab assignment today. What is significant about that? Also, Pauly has a thought. Pauly thinks that the Astros will be in first place by the end of the month. Will the Astros be in first place at the end of May? 713-780-ESPN. It's our HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
All teams covered, no talking points necessary. You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
We'll get into the huge, big-time, once-in-a-generation prospect that the Spacers are activating ahead of tonight's game, which you can listen to on ESPN 92.5. We'll talk about that in a moment. But let's go out to the HRMP listener line real quick, get Keith in here. Keith, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. What's up, Keith?
Good afternoon, guys. How's it going?
What's up, man?
I wanted to know if it was – I know that right now the Texans don't have any primetime games, but with that – Panther and Texan game been such a must-see, maybe. Do you think it's possible that they could flex that to a primetime game, or is that too early? Have a good one. Thanks.
Thanks for
Appreciate
listening,
it, Keith.
I don't think they can flex that early, can they? I mean, I wasn't aware of the...
I might be able to from weeks... Okay, this is kind of... For Sunday Night Football, a team can be flexed up to primetime twice between weeks 5 and 10. From weeks 11 through 17, the NFL can flex teams at their discretion. So I guess you can. I guess you can flex a game that early in the year, but I do think it would be pretty unheard of.
Yeah, I can't see that happening. I think the only time that it might make sense that early in the season, if some catastrophic season-ending injury happened to like one of the quarterbacks or one of the most impactful players in a game, or a guy that was the reason why the storyline said get that game that early in the season. I just don't.
They would have to be good too. Like
yeah.
Both teams would have to be good.
I just won. I don't see it. I don't see the. Like I said, the networks put a ton of thought into the who, when, and when, where, and why when they start picking these national schedules, the big time games, the standalones, and I can't see a flex that early for Texans Panthers.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to happen either. But I guess technically they can do it. But for it to happen, I think that Blankers is onto something. Like, your Sunday night game is going to have to be like a toilet game pretty quick into the season. And injuries probably would have to derail that team. And then I think the Texans and the Panthers both would have to be good. Like, it would take something unheard of, in my opinion, for that game to end up being flexed. But good question, Keith. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. The Spacers are activating this Altuve guy, Blankers. I think he's got a chance. But big news, because Jose Altuve will play in a baseball game for the Sugarland Spacers today. You can listen at ESPN 92.5. Look, he had surgery on March 22nd. When he had surgery, they said he was not going to resume baseball activities for 2 months. That would have been May 22nd. Mm-hmm. He's 10 days ahead of schedule. This is great, assuming that there will be no setbacks.
Please don't jinx it, because this, for all the crap we've had to deal with injuries and then not coming back on time, I really want this one to come through as advertised, quicker than normal, great recovery, and get him back in the lineup, because the Brantley thing has got me feeling a certain kind of way. The lingering McCullers yet again has got me feeling a certain kind of way. It would be great to get Altuve on the fast track, get him back, you know, well before that June 1st 2 month period that we were looking at, and get him to help this ball club. And I'm excited by it. I'm surprised, quite honestly, by it. When I heard the birthday present, and of course a lot of that was tongue-in-cheek, but I still thought it was way too soon for him with that injury on that thumb and how it relates to hitting, way too soon for him to take BP. But then when I heard, not only did he take it, but he was driving balls over the fence and everybody was taking note and he looked great, and I'm going, okay, well, either that fracture wasn't that bad or his healing powers are pretty awesome. But then, you hear that he's continued to take batting practice. Well, that's great, but you didn't think it was going to change your mind in terms of when you might see him in an Astros uniform again. But now if he's playing AAA baseball games, I got to believe that, kind of like the Brantley thing, maybe in a week or so we might be talking about him rejoining the big club, and that would be outstanding for this ball club and where they need a spark, and he would be that guy.
Swole Daddy saying small bones. Have you heard BK's theory where small bones heal faster? Yeah, BK has a theory that small bones heal faster.
Is he the master of the small bone?
You'd have to ask him.
Just asking a question.
And I answered the question.
Yes.
You'd have to ask him. I'm not the guy to ask. I don't know. That's a very BK thing to say. I'll just leave it at that.
Yes, it is.
What's interesting about this, like, I don't disagree. Like, I think best case scenario, he's back with the Astros like next weekend, because the rehab assignment, like, if the bone, they're not waiting for Altuve to recover. Altuve has recovered. If Altuve had not recovered, there's no way they're letting him touch a baseball bat. So Jose Altuve, the bone has recovered. This is just about like the bounce back ability. What does it feel like after four at bats in a game? Can you play back to back days? Like, now they're kind of just gauging, how does Altuve react after a ball game? How does he react after two games in a row? Same thing with Brantley, where Brantley was playing every other day. How is he going to react? And then as soon as he joins, you know, the major league playing again, all of a sudden it's bothering him. So this isn't about healing. This is, how does it feel just going through
Jeremy,
a game? So I think if everything comes in well, Blankers, I think that best case scenario, he's back in a week.
Yeah, I think it's fantastic. But don't you think too, if you're one of the Astros doctors, with all that's been dissected and criticized about how they've handled and how injuries have gone to this point, don't you think that even though it's healed, you'd be bordering on being as cautious as possible and not rushing him back? Because even if all the x-rays and everything say, no, it looks like it's healed, I almost would say, and even if it's a conversation with Dana Brown or Jim Crane and God knows Jeff Bagwell, but conversations internally to say, yeah, everybody says it's healed, but the last thing we need is to have something set him back because we brought him back too soon, and also we're going to get killed for it. I would think that, to me, this is why it's so surprising that he's on this kind of a fast track. I love it. I hope it continues that way, and I hope he's back and we don't have to worry about this ever again. I would just think from a medical, a team doctor perspective, and from the organization itself, you'd be hyper-cautious about this one.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if they haven't been, though. Like, your criticism of the way that the Astros have brought players back, I think, is very fair. You can look at the Jake Meyer situation last year, and then Dusty Baker, like, he basically threw Click under the bus, says that we didn't want to bring him back that soon, but we brought him back soon. And then Click, even last year, was talking about how they were going to address their return to play. situation within the organization, their philosophy, I should say. And then you had the same deal with Michael Brantley, where it's, okay, Brantley's coming off the same injury and the same surgery that Myers had. He goes out for a 20-day rehab, comes back, and it's like, he might not be ready to play yet. Chaz McCormick, he came back after the back injury, said he was 100%, played one game, sat the next two, and Dusty said that he came back, he was trying too hard, or he busted it a little bit too much in rehab. So I think the criticism is fair, but the bone's healed or the bone's not. Like, it's binary. It's not a vague gray area thing. It's either the bone is healed or the bone is not healed. So obviously it's healed. There's no doubt about that. I think that they have taken the steps to, like, get them ready for this, like taking BP. Okay, well, how does it feel after BP? Mm-hmm. Okay, take BP 2 days in a row. How does it feel after BP the second day in a row? And this is the natural step now, getting them back into game. So I don't feel like it's rushed. I think it's fair to criticize the Astros' philosophy on their return to play, but it is case by case, and I don't feel like they're rushing Altuve. And I don't think you could act scared either. Like, I don't think you can act like,
cautious is different than scared. And I hear what you're saying.
But what are they being cautious about? I guess.
So, like, I'm not a medical professional, and obviously I didn't stay at a Holiday Inn Select last night. But my big thing is, you can have a bone healed, but you know that. Even if it's healed, getting back to, like, baseball activities and that, you know, that constant pounding of the thumb because it's on the bat and that the impact and the foul balls.
Well, we don't know where the break's at, right? Like, what if it's
That's what I'm saying.
The outside of the hand.
That's what I'm saying. It could have been a hairline fracture that was way smaller than, but you have to report it as a fracture nonetheless. And you know, maybe it's because of that that someone reacted and said normal recovery time is 2 months because it was broken. Yes, it's broken technically, but realistically, it's almost a hairline fracture. That's why I'm saying I don't know. It's just that even when the x-rays and the scans say it's officially quote-unquote healed and also kind of back in baseball mode with all the impact and all the different things that particular joint of the hand goes through, that's why I think that from an organizational standpoint, I'm loving the fact that he's on a fast track. I just think a lot of times I would be hyper cautious because of where that break happened or that fracture happened and how it impacts hitting on a at bat by a pitch by pitch basis.
I'd like to think that they would do right by Altuve, but it's totally fair to criticize their return to play. So yeah,
a lot of it would be left up to him too. I would think, like, if he feels great.
Yeah, I don't think it's good to leave it up to him though, because you know that he wants to be back as soon as possible.
And you'd love him to be back as soon as possible, but you definitely have to get not only the sign-off, but you probably have a discussion with him about, look, I mean, do you feel like – I know you want to come back, but what we're trying to avoid here is another setback. And you're right. Most players are just going to say, screw that, I want to play, unless you're Anthony Davis, and then you say, screw that, I'm out for 2 months.
0002 says, Yordan rule number 11, no more WBC. I think that's a great rule. I think it's an outstanding rule. A Yordan rule that can be applied to all of the Astros. No WBC anymore for the Houston Astros.
I'm all for that as well, based on what we just had happen this year.
The timeline for Altuve, like, obviously he's playing with the Spacers tonight in Sugarland. You can listen to it on ESPN 92.5. This starts the rehab assignment, which we know because we just witnessed the Michael Brantley saga, that 20 days is the maximum amount of time that a hitter, that's 30 days for a pitcher, 20 days is the maximum amount of time that a hitter can have a rehab assignment. So if Jose Altuve exhausts the maximum amount of time that he has this rehab assignment, there's not a setback that puts him back on the IL, halts his rehab assignment, Jose Altuve's latest arrival date, assuming no setback, would be June 1st.
Okay.
The latest would be June 1st. The earliest could be tomorrow. I mean, obviously that's not going to happen, but the latest is June 1st. So
it's crazy that that's what we were hoping for when we first saw the injury and then got the diagnosis. And now it seems like that's worst case scenario, and that's great if you're an Astro fan.
Yeah. I mean, worst case scenario would be a setback, but if we're assuming no setback, then June 1st would be the latest that they would get Altuve back. Bob Nightingale reported that the Astros are targeting the May 27th homestand. So maybe that's the date for Jose Altuve, which is going to be fun.
At least we know that we're going to avoid the Brantley situation because he took the BP before he went to the minor leagues. So hopefully now he won't get injured in BP to send him back to the minor leagues.
There's been conflicting reports on that with the Brantley thing. Chandler Roman, his latest article about the in The Athletic, said that he hadn't swung a bat since his last rehab game.
Really?
Yeah. So, I mean, who knows what's real? We have no idea.
That's, again, a problem when it comes to Astros and injuries.
Yeah, it's just vague. It's frustrating. 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Let's get to Paulie's thought. Is there a chance the Astros are in first place by the end of the month? Also, I have a feeling that something's going to happen with the Astros that we've experienced recently. I have a feeling we're going to see another Miles Straw type of trade in July. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.